This is The Topic is Trek, episode 15 for Friday, February 23rd, 2018. Putting the Odd in Odyssey. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already!
Boy, that guy sounds really great. Oh, hello, everyone. Yeah. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your co-hosts here on The Topic is Trek. For it. On The Topic is Trek. Ah, darn. There we go. Gotta get it started early.
And he was not to bring the bell on the bridge anymore.
I can't change the laws of physics, Captain.
And beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hello.
Hello. And on bell, Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
You know, that's been the rest of my day. People just laughing at my superior intellect.
Oh, yeah, we're laughing, all right.
Yours is a superior intellect?
Mine is the superior. Well, I did grow up next to Lake Superior.
Ah, well, there you go. Good
There's
enough.
A connection.
Good enough. It counts. Anything special up with you gentlemen these days? Just having a good old time? Feeling the withdrawal from Discovery, perhaps?
Yes. Can I go back and watch it again, Captain?
Well, yes, you can, assuming you haven't unsubscribed to CBS All Access.
I have not. I'm going to keep it just so that I can watch it again and again.
Yeah, I definitely have to do a rewatch pretty soon. We're going to be talking spoilers alert coming up here because obviously. Oh, that's as far as we got into that one.
Wow,
that's a teaser.
That's right. Teaser. We'll have more of that later because we will be talking about the final episode of season one of Discovery in a little bit. But right now, it's time to tap into subspace chatter and see what's happening in and around the Star Trek universe. And we're going to start off with an amazing discovery, and Craig's going to tell us all about it.
By the way, whenever you say subspace chatter, I keep thinking cheddar. I don't know
why. Cheese.
In my head, I hear cheddar.
As if there's not enough cheese on this show.
Yeah. You know, when you look back at the Next Generation, you've seen videos of like the tests of the different makeup and stuff that they were doing. How weird it was! You know, some of the things were kind of off. Like Geordi looked funny.
Yeah,
they were testing out the glasses and stuff. But imagine this, if you will. What if Captain Picard had pointy ears? Well, actually, imagine Captain Picard's job was taken by somebody with pointy ears. And in the 24th century, USS Enterprise wasn't called that, but instead was the USS Odyssey.
Are we still talking about the same show here?
I know, believe it or not. All that and more could have just happened in 1986. New documents have emerged detailing an alternate plan for a new Star Trek show in the 80s that would have resulted in a very different Next Generation. So, I'm not sure which Tuesday is, but it says on Tuesday, the podcast called The Trek Files dropped a slew of tantalizing and previously totally unknown historical details. Several documents that outline what Paramount Pictures had planned for Trek TV show in 1986. The concept was created without the participation of Gene Roddenberry, and it doesn't resemble anything what the Next Generation ended up looking like at all. Specifically, the captain of the primary ship was named Captain Roan, who was a Vulcan and he dies in the pilot episode. Well,
what? A captain of a starship dies in the pilot? That's unheard of.
Yeah, no, no. I don't think that'll ever work.
I know. It's crazy. Crazy talk. According to the memo, Captain Roan's death in the pilot episode is a tragic moment, to say the least, I'm sure. His loss is felt deeply by the men and women who serve under him. However, it is comforting to know that Captain Roan continued to live on the ship's computer as a holographic image from which he can be summoned from consultation in times of great need.
So is that comforting or just really creepy?
I don't know that a Vulcan would be very comforting at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Actually, I was thinking that he was celebrated by, oh, thank God he got rid of it. What? He's still here?
So quick plug. You mentioned the Trek Files. That's Larry Nemechek's new podcast. And
yes,
I've talked with him in the past, and he recently mentioned that he was going to launch this. So it's great to see he's off the ground, and gems like this are going to rocket that guy. We're looking at getting him on this show in not too distant future.
Yeah. That'd be awesome to talk to him. So, there's more to it, and it talks about the ship and, about the Odyssey. Did we ever see the Odyssey, a ship called the Odyssey? Probably.
Probably at some point.
Oh, it was at Wolf 359 and got blown up.
before we got there.
It was one of the ships floating sideways. So anyway. All right. Well, that's pretty cool. I'm sure people spitballed all kinds of crazy ideas for Star Trek that never either seen the light of day.
A lot of good information in that article. Go check it out. Follow our show notes over at thetopicistrek.com.
Very good. Nice little segue there, because we're talking about one dead captain to another. And let's move on to talk a little bit about Discovery at this point. And this article comes to us from Digital Spy. Star Trek Discovery wrapped up its first season last week, bringing a few plot threads to a close while giving fans a tease of what they can expect going forward. You may have been watching every episode as soon as they release them, or maybe the whole thing has passed you by. But just how big is the revived Star Trek on the small screen? Huge. According to industry analyst Parrot Analytics, through tracking online streams, both legal and illegal, social media chatter, the sci-fi franchise notched up over 35 million. No,
53
demand.
Million.
Yeah, 53.
Oh, 53 you transposed million, your numbers right? again.
I yeah, that's the carry the two.
You owe me $16.
Whoa. That escalated quickly.
What that means is, in terms of both people watching and online hype, Discovery is trouncing everything else, including traditional TV heavy hitters like Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead,
oh my gosh,
and Stranger Things.
Wow.
So that is That's pretty darn amazing. I mean, we're inside the bubble here. So for us, we're talking about this thing all the time. And I guess I didn't really realize how big this thing actually is.
We should have started a Stranger Things podcast.
We should. Then we'd have to switch over to this. Because
the topic is Stranger Things.
Game of Thrones is winding down, but I'm sure people will be talking about that for years.
Well, if you listen to The Topic is Trek while standing on your head and you're in the upside down, then you're kind of the Stranger Things.
Huh?
Never mind.
Well, chewing on a dragon. I'm not.
So I wonder, will we ever get any official number? I mean, I guess it doesn't matter to me per se exactly, but I'm just curious to see how well it did. I'm sure CBS has a good idea by seeing.
Yeah, I doubt we will, because Netflix doesn't release numbers. Amazon doesn't release numbers. So I don't think CBS Online is going to release numbers either.
Except for their public trading company, they'll probably say something. I don't know how accurate or what, like you said, I don't know.
Well, Amazon is publicly traded. They don't give out their numbers.
So there.
Okay.
Netflix is publicly traded.
Hey, it doesn't really matter to me. It's just, I liked it. That's like,
right.
Hey, but the Black Panther was nice. Oh, it made Buku's the money. Right. That doesn't matter to me. I still liked it.
Right. So we have an article later on that talks that we're going to talk about the CBS and Star Trek and All Access. But yeah, I don't think we'll ever get numbers specifically from it. But I think the fact that it's been renewed probably says the numbers are pretty darn good. And certainly if this much, you have this much online chatter about it, I would say that because I do know people that now that the show is completely over for the season, I'm starting to get posts from people that are signing up for the 2-week free subscription and binging the show.
Good luck with that.
Well, one person's already done it that I know of. So,
well, you know, if you watch a few a day for a week, you can knock it out.
Yeah, we're only talking about 15 hours worth of television.
And you know what they say about Star Trek people anyway. Get a life!
And speaking about getting a life, many people in Canada have a life. But there's a special town in Canada that we'd like to talk about. Or actually, I think someone in particular would like to talk about.
Did you know there's also a Vulcan, Michigan?
I did not know that.
It's just a mile or two from my aunt's house. That's right.
Do they do any of these same type of things we're going to be talking about?
It's so small, I could never find where the city limit was. I think it's just a sign with Vulcan written on both sides.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Anyway, this comes to us from the CalgaryHerald.com. Vulcan amends the town budget to buy Star Trek uniforms for counselors at $620 a piece.
Hey, I'm glad we solved all the other problems in town. Let's buy some Star Trek uniforms.
The town of 2000, some 130 kilometers southeast of Calgary, has wrapped much of its identity in Star Trek mythology since it shares the moniker of the homeworld of the iconic Mr. Spock. And that means its mayor and six town councilors often sport ceremonial United Federation of Planets jackets, which they wore last November in Calgary at the annual Alberta Urban Municipalities Association convention. Does that even spell anything? No. Was Carl like Urban there? No. Yeah. On Monday, council approved plans to replace their aging jackets, some of which have passed down from council to council for years. Ah, it's like the rite of ascension kind of thing.
I hope they washed them.
You can have my jacket and my batleth.
No. You can't have a batleth. You'll put your hand on another man's batleth.
Including one that's 17 years old. Vulcan resident Caitlin Berta told council that the cost for each jacket would be about $620 for a total of about $4,340 for the entire wardrobe change. Councilman Lyle Magnuson said he did believe the cost was, quote, a lot of money, unquote, when he first looked at the estimate, but did like that a local resident is making the jackets.
Oh. Yes, keep it local.
I was going to say, they should come to Dragon Con and talk to some cosplayers because they don't spend $600 on it.
Well, a lot of times they don't get paid at all. So yeah. Maybe they would jump at the chance.
But you look at the cosplayers, they only have to hold together for like 3 days and some of them barely make it.
Not 17 years.
Right. Right.
These need durability. So I think it's kind of fun. I'd like to go there, and I can't, I'm wondering if I can get my brother, who's the chief of police in Carmel by the Sea, to do something with his police uniforms and Carmel.
They can replace the Star Shield with Delta Shields.
In honor of Roger C. Carmel. See, that's what it's all about.
Oh, there you go. Nice tie-in.
Speaking about tie-ins, I have absolutely nothing to tie me in from that story.
We need a no segue sound.
That's right. Womp, womp. Hey, it's a sad trombone.
If you could only 3D print those uniforms.
Ah, there you go. Perfect.
Hey, we saw Michael Burnham do it.
Do what?
Yes, we did. We did.
We saw Michael Burnham doing it.
In the replicator. She made her
Remember, I kept thinking, what kind of storm is this? And then they back on and went, oh, cool. Anyway, so Star Trek Online is going to offer custom 3D printed player ships. It's kind of neat. If you really like your ship in free to play MMORGP, Star Trek. Oh, on-
Every letter in the alphabet.
There just we- kept going. Yeah. You'll see me over to have the
P. He was in Quarks, right?
He was right. Sitting at the end.
No, wait, scene. That's Worf's dad, the House of Morg.
Oh. Morgum.
The P is silent in Klingon.
Yeah, the P sound. Yeah. You'll soon be able to have the option to actually to have an actual replica. Today's cryptic announcement announced a partnership with Mixed Dimensions to offer players a chance to get 3D handcrafted Starship collectibles captured directly from the PC version of Star Trek Online. In a statement, STO, Star Trek Online, executive producer Steven Ricosa says, "We are absolutely elated." Wow. to expand the Star Trek Online to the physical universe, our new partnership with Mixed Dimensions will allow our community to immortalize their favorite ship, starships. We can't wait to see the reaction from our captains when the first wave of ships begin to roll out. So after players design their own ship, starship, when within the game, they can upload their model to GamePrint to the GamePrint website, where they will be offered several different purchase options. Captains can commission one of the company's master artists to hand paint an incredibly detailed 12-inch resin high-end collectible version of the star of their starship. They can also order a single color version or a primed model, which allows them to paint the entire starship themselves. For those who prefer to stick with the classics, GamePrint will offer completed models replicating 20 of Star Trek Online's exclusive and most popular starships. And it's funny this comes up because I was just thinking the other day, and I know what I get for thinking, but I thought, yeah, I want some little ships. I've got the Enterprise, but it's more of a Hallmark,
yeah,
ornament, Enterprise D. And I was like, you know, I want some other ships. So I started looking. You got to have some deep pockets to really make a collection of those things. And I just wanted I started thinking, okay, maybe if I just get some of the Hot Wheels version, because Hot Wheels make some starships. Even those aren't cheap, you know, because you get, I don't know. And most of them were the newer Enterprise in the movies. And I like that all right, but yeah, it's getting expensive. I'd be interested in checking this out, but I don't know how much a printed 3D model of a ship would cost.
Yeah, I noticed that they didn't give prices in here, but I got to think if you've got it printed out, it's 12 inches long and you can have it hand painted. We're not talking cheap here.
12 inches is on the big side of most consumer printers.
Right.
Yes. So
this is
unless you made parts that fit together.
Well, I don't know. Unless there's some basic elements when you're designing your starship, because I don't play Star Trek Online. If there's, you basically mix and match elements to create your starship, I suppose there are some common elements, but
I mess around with Star Trek Online and I'm nowhere near building my own ship.
Yeah.
But on a side note, I do like this Pathfinder. It's a pretty cool looking
ship.
You've
never built your own Enterprise?
Well, I think he means in the game.
In the game.
Oh, okay. Have you ever built an Enterprise?
Yeah, the one you sent me a while back. It was like that little metal.
Oh, yeah, the metal one, the Christmas ornament kind of thing.
Oh, I built the AMT one a couple of times.
Yeah, I thought about doing that too, getting a model and building it. I haven't done that. No, not necessarily, not a model. No.
All right.
Should I? I guess I should.
We took a sidetrack there.
Yes. Well, it was still the case where the topic was Trek.
Yeah.
I said the topic was Trek, so they didn't need a ding, I suppose.
That was sneaky. You tricked me. You tricked me.
Simon says.
I have an idea. If any of our listeners have built their own models, well, send us some pictures.
Yeah. I didn't say models. I just said build your own Enterprise.
Yeah, but I would like to see if anybody has built models. That'd be pretty cool.
Yes. We could put photos of them on our website, of our fans' models. We could have a gallery.
We can also call it a blog and make a blog entry with their pictures.
What is this blog thing of which you speak?
When we get to the 23rd century, you'll understand.
Oh.
But right here in the 21st century, we're talking about Star Trek streams to profits as CBS asks, who needs ads?
That was slick.
Thank you. CBS Corporation overcame a slump in TV advertising to report higher sales and profits in the final quarter of 2017, buoyed by offering programs to online providers such as Netflix and attracting subscribers to its own all-access service with shows like Star Trek Discovery.
I should have invested in CBS.
I was going to say, they must have put a Ferengi in as a CEO.
Les Moonves is a Ferengi, perhaps? CBS boosted sales from licensing programs by 33% and subscriber fees by 20%, according to a statement Thursday. The company said its two-paid streaming services have reached almost 5 million subscribers. So that doesn't give you the total number of people that could be watching Discovery, though, because remember, most of the world is watching Discovery on Netflix.
So the
number of subscribers on CBS is just a partial number.
So could I get a VPN connection and watch on Netflix somewhere else?
I've read people do that, but I don't know.
Or does it know your account is tied to US?
Well, I know mine does. It's part of my... Anyway, I want to hear about this.
The topic is hacks. Anyway... CEO Les Moonves, Ferengi at heart, is trying to sustain momentum at the company he has led for more than a decade while his board explores now this is important. I don't know if we talked about this before. Board explores a merger with Viacom, which, like CBS, is controlled by the Redstone family. Viacom owns cable networks including MTV and Nickelodeon, as well as the Paramount Pictures studio.
Dun, dun, yep. Dun.
So that's right. CBS, which owns Star Trek on television, could get back together again with the company that owns Star Trek for motion pictures.
Got my attention.
That's very strange whistle there.
That was supposed to be more like...
Yes. Moonves opposed the deal in 2016, but has been urged to reconsider by Sherry Redstone, who was vice chairman of both companies. And I've got a feeling a lot of this has to do with Disney. You know, now that Disney seems to be gobbling other companies up, I think maybe Viacom is saying, you know, if we get together, we're a little bit stronger opposition to this type of thing than.
Yeah, because you got ABC and Disney and everything kind of rolled, Marvel, all that stuff's rolled into one. So, yeah, it makes sense to me.
So we don't know what will happen with that, but the good news is at this point is that this is definitely shows a commitment that CBS All Access is all in on Star Trek Discovery.
Not to go CNBC on you, but CBS is off their 52-week high by a lot. Their 52-week range was as high as $70.10. They are currently at $55.38. They have slowly trickling down until they release numbers, which will include, you know, revenues. I'm really surprised that people didn't see this coming and invest now. So now I'm really looking at maybe I should buy some CBS.
Because if all of a sudden merger rumors start to get stronger.
Even just the earning numbers that are bolstered around Discovery.
Right.
We shall see. So, we shall see.
The topic is Wall Street. We'll return after this.
Wall Trek.
We're just trying to bring you the broad spectrum of news out there in the Star Trek universe.
We are. Now, that's real news, but...
We have no real news.
Aside from real news, we have this article.
Oh, they didn't see that one coming at all.
Right.
From the Daily Star over in the UK, scientist claims humans can morph into frogs.
I've done it once or twice.
Frogs is all uppercase. What? But it's not all as it seems. All right. I love the picture on this. There's a frog, a split screen with a guy from like the 1940s holding up his index finger, dressed as a doctor. Yeah. Science!
Science!
Let me make this font a little bigger for us old folks. The so-called research published in the journal American Research Journal of Bioscientists, or the ARJB, was revealed to be the storyline from Star Trek Voyager episode called, you got it, Threshold, disguised in scientific jargon. In this episode, Starfleet Lieutenant Tom Paris achieves the maximum of warp 10. Okay, what happens if you go faster than warp 10, Clinton?
Bad things, man.
Oh, I thought you started listening to Spinal Tap at 11.
Oh, no.
Okay.
It's too early. Turn up the warp drop to 11.
Hey, is that warp 10? Turn it up, man.
It's faster than warp 10.
Right.
It's more than warp 10. Anyway, he achieves maximum warp 10. That results in his body morphing into a frog-like human. The paper titled Rapid Genetic and Development Morphology Changed Following Extreme Celerity reports how extreme celerity or speed, an environmental factor rarely considered, can produce strikingly rapid developmental changes in morphology, even in mammalian systems. I've never said that many large words in a sentence before.
They can see what this got published. It's very sciencey.
Wait. What did Farnsworth say on Futurama the other day? With that many large words, it's no wonder the universe is about to implode. Yeah. That's not what he said, but it was along those lines. Anyway, the author wrote, we employed a replicated design wherein two human subjects were exposed to theoretical maximum celerity, warp 10, and examined. Physical responses to the celerity became apparent in later observations. Two subjects were allowed to breed, and a litter of three viable motile progeny were produced with no obvious external physical deformity relative to the parents. Oh my goodness. They're just making it sound sciencey, but it is the story.
Yeah, and it's the worst Voyager episode.
The paper's author, who called himself Lewis Zimmerman,
see what he did there?
Yeah,
said he sent the paper to 10 open access journals, of which 4 accepted his work. Oh my, they're really doing some fact checking there, aren't they?
That is hilarious.
Oh, makes me want to try some other storylines out in the press.
Yeah.
Let's see travel. Spock's brain.
No, no.
If you go fast enough around the sun,
then you can get whales.
Yes.
There be whales here.
But the place that there not be whales is in the mirror universe.
They're there. They just have goatees.
Oh. Yeah,
that's right.
Well, tell us more about these mirror universe shenanigans.
I still say you look better with a beard.
All right. So, you know, Star Trek, The Next Generation, is actually going to get a mirror universe crossover.
Say what?
Will they all be on the USS Odyssey then?
They're all done. I mean,
Picard's dead.
No, because
we got some Vulcan.
Captain Ron or Roan, he's alive in the mirror universe. He's not a holographic image in this one.
Oh.
Right. All right. So keep in mind that, you know, The Next Generation still goes on in comic book form. And I guess books. They still make TNG books, I guess.
Sure. We'll say there are for this show.
All right. So prepare for a return trip to the mirror universe in the 24th century. IDW, Publishing has announced Star Trek The Next Generation Through the Mirror, a new 5-issue miniseries following up on last year's Star Trek The Next Generation's Broken or Mirror Broken series. Star Trek The Next Generation.
It's broken already.
Yeah, it's broken.
13 years of bad luck.
Yeah. So Star Trek The Next Generation is one of the two Star Trek series to never cross over, visit the mirror universe. Well, we got an alternate universe. That's right. I'm thinking when the Enterprise C came over. So Star Trek The Next Generation Mirror Broken will introduce fans to a mirror universe version of the Enterprise D crew. However, the story was self-contained, taking place entirely in the mirror universe. Star Trek The Next Generation Through the Mirror will bring the characters from the classic TV show face-to-face with their mirror selves. So TNG Through the Mirror will be released weekly beginning May 2nd. The series was written by Scott and David Tipton, and the same team who wrote Star Trek The Next Generation. Mirror Broken. That series artist J.K. Woodward will provide covers for the new miniseries. Each issue will, of the series will feature a different interior artist. These include Chris Johnson, Marcus Toe, Josh Wood, and Carlos Nito, and Deborah Carita. The one thing that's never been done in Star Trek Mirror Universe Tales is an all-out cash grab clash between.
Oh no, that's been done. That's before.
Been done plenty of times. Yeah.
The opportunity to set Picard against Picard was just too exciting to resist. So I'm looking forward to this. I'm putting this on my calendar so I can make sure.
Oh, the diplomacy must that must go on between those two. It's watching C-SPAN.
Meetings from hell.
I'm going to hit you first, but before I do, yeah.
So I was looking, I believe last year that it was the first issue of that was, I think that was part of Free Comic Book Day. We just happened to pick it up on Free Comic Book Day, but I'm looking at the list for this year. If that was the case last year, it doesn't appear to be the case this year.
I can't remember if I saw that. I do remember the seeing it because it has here it is. It's a cool picture of Picard with a goatee and he's got no sleeves.
Yep.
He's chilling out in the captain's chair.
He's showing and of course, his guns.
Deanna Troi is showing something else.
He's showing his phasers, yeah.
Yeah, she's showing her phasers. And, hey and Data looks part Borgish.
So I don't see it on the list. That one you're paying for. That one's not free, apparently.
Yeah, and the face palms are free. They also exist in the Mirror Universe.
All right. Well, we're going to skip ahead a bit here because we're running a little late and we've got something special going on. We're going to get a couple of book reviews from Chuck as part of our subspace.
My book chatter. Review by Chuck Tomasi.
Remember,
age 14.
We're grading on a curve. So
it better be a wild curve. This past weekend, my wife and I took a trip to California by way of road. It was about 10 and a half
hours.
By way of
rail.
Yeah, it felt like we were taking the wagon trail sometimes. But we went to see my brother in Salinas, California, and I may have mentioned he is the chief of police in Carmel-by-the-Sea. Very proud of my younger brother. He's got a wonderful family. Well, while we were driving, we drove for a reason because we needed to take a big honking telescope to him and just didn't fit in the overhead of a plane. So road trip. So Friday we got on the road and Donna said, I've got some books for us. Some were biography documentaries and she had a couple of Star Trek books in there. I said, start with Star Trek. And the first one was called Star Trek Prime Directive. I have to look at who the author was. Was it Greg Cox on that one? And it was narrated by James Doohan. This will be interesting. And the story in general, I'll read you the flap cover back. What do they call that? The jacket cover, you know, where they give you a little synopsis of what the book is about.
Dust jacket.
I see. It's been so long since I held a real book.
He does. Wait, Clinton, he doesn't have a dust jacket on his Kindle.
Yeah. It's called a case. When Captain James T. Kirk destroys a world. Yes, you heard me right. A crime that breaks the Federation's highest law, the Prime Directive. Yeah, that kind of interferes with the natural course of society. You destroy the world. It interferes with the Prime Directive, and the Enterprise is nearly destroyed. He faces the disgrace, and it's up to the crew to find out exactly what happened. So a lot of it is mainly from it starts out as the perspective from Scotty. And I'll tell you, James Doohan does a wonderful Scotty. He's nailed that voice character.
Yeah,
he sure does not, however, do a very good Spock.
Well, she.
So they're around orbit on this planet that is pre-warp capable, but they are nuclear capable, and they're on the brink of blowing themselves up with nuclear weapons. And
Kirk Hills.
and they said, well, you know, if they are able to keep going this way, they will have war capability in, what was it, 10 or 20 years. It was something real short range. It's up to us to interfere. So they do interfere. It's captain's discretion, if I recall. He goes in and negotiates peace. But before they can get back on their routine mission, whatever, you know, their five-year mission to seek out bold new worlds, the planet suddenly goes up in flames. They go, what's happening before us? They see on the view screen that all of their weapons are firing at once. And that's, they go down there to try and shut down the systems by warp or rescue people or whatever. They're in the atmosphere. They have to enter the atmosphere and they get fired upon. The Enterprise is severely disabled. And they said, well, if they fired upon us, then they knew we were here. It just became this big mess. Kirk is taken from the crew. He's about to be court-martialed or whatever. I forget what the setting is, but he's working the loading dock on some ship when he's introduced into the story under a false identity. And somebody spots him for who he really is. They go, "You can't fool me, Kirk." He says,
"Did you not get a better job?"
overall, I thought the story was decent. I think it was probably hyped up a bit because James Doohan narrated it. The outcome was, of course, Kirk is exonerated because they discovered there was a different means of that actually blew up that planet. Oh, and there were some survivors who survived by their biological stasis, whatever it was. But I give this a 4.0 out of 5.0. Oddly enough, this is the lower of my two ratings, but on Amazon, you'll see that the reviewers actually rated this one a little higher than the other one for whatever reason. The second one we listened to when we were coming back on Monday is called Star Trek Legacies, Captain to Captain. This is book one of three. And I'll tell you, they left this one on such a high note that I really want to go out and get book two and three right now. I enjoyed this one much better. This one is, unlike the Prime Directive, which I could only find on Amazon in hard copy, and I think it's on audible.com. Can't check. Star Trek Legacies is a nice dirt cheap read, mass market paperback for $7.19 at Amazon. We should probably put together a product page for some of these things that we're recommending and reviewing.
Indeed.
I can help with that. I did it with a couple of our sites before. Hidden aboard the USS Enterprise is a secret that has been passed from captain to captain. From Robert April to Christopher Pike to James T. Kirk, now the return of the enigmatic woman once known as Number One has brought that secret to light, and Kirk and his crew must risk everything to finish a mission that began with April so many years ago. This has a feel of Spock bringing Pike to Talos? Talos 4?
The only planet carries the death sentence.
And this, yeah, that is mentioned. There are a lot of references. That's what stood out in this book. There are a few in Prime Directive, but this one seems to be throwing them in for gratification sometimes as they mention where they are in the timeline. And, this episode happened only a year ago, and they keep mentioning a lot of Star Trek references. They even cross series, and they because when they go back, they take the storyline back 17 years as you're reliving and recounting what happened on the Captain April. It's not his mission, but it's his number one. It's her first landing party that she leads, and it goes horribly wrong, and that's what precipitates a lot of this stuff. In both cases, here's the interesting, in both of these books, oddly enough, the problem, shall we say, the invader race is from an alternate universe, another dimension. Okay, that's just a little too coinkadinkle.
But yeah. Right.
the one thing that cracked me up about this was every time the narrator, whom I don't recall, but it wasn't a celebrity like James Doohan, when he would do this gruff voice, whether it was the commander of the alien race who were slug-shaped, he ended up sounding something like Lur from Futurama. And I kept wanting to say, my name is Lur from the planet Omicron Persei 8. He had about three characters that he did that with. Like, that was the only gruff voice he knew. Other than that, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was well-written. It took a few twists and turns. Don and I would eventually figure them out right before the reveal. We'd go, oh, you know, they're going to do that. Or, oh, so-and-so is going to trick them. And they did leave it on a cliffhanger. It was unresolved. So there is definitely a part two and a part three that I look forward to reading / listening to in the future. And I will bring you those follow-ups.
Now, how come it's not called Captain to Captain to Captain if it's April Pike and Kirk?
They did mention in the book at one point, because this woman who's known as number one has to be first in everything. And she eventually escalated to captain. And now she's about to become Commodore when she goes rogue and does this mission and takes this secret, whatever it is, from Kirk that I'm not going to reveal. Or that would be... Yeah, one of those.
Yes. Yep.
Why are you cutting my thing short?
She's about to become. She's about to be assigned as a Commodore, and she doesn't want the. You know, this is her last big thing that she can right a past wrong by doing this mission. So I Legacies book one, Captain to Captain. In the book, Kirk says, "Well, you know, tell me, just Captain to Captain. Why are you doing this? Or, you know, what's going on here?" Because I don't think he knew the full history of this secret that he's been holding on to, and it is revealed through.
So they say, well, read the rest of the book and you'll find out. I don't have time for this. Or no.
Yeah, here's the book, Kirk. Deal with it. Yeah. So Star Trek Prime Directive, liked it a lot. Nice hearing Jimmy Doohan's voice again. Star Trek Legacies, Captain to Captain, I liked it a bit better just because of the storyline. I thought was a bit better.
A captain hat trick.
And you know, Star Trek novels are a dime a dozen. So if somebody else has one that they'd like to let us know about that they enjoyed, I think the last one, I hate to say this, the last one I read was Vendetta probably 15 years ago.
Oh, well. Yeah, it's been a long time since I read one of the novels as well.
I know, so. We listened to Imzadi probably 20 years ago or more.
I'm actually, I'm almost done with Desperate Hours.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's coming along. I'm enjoying it. It's pretty good. I'll talk about it more when I get done with it on the next show. I'll talk about it.
All right.
There's a couple of, they kind of jump back and forth in a couple of different stories. I'm like, whoa, who are we talking about? And then I go, oh, okay. It's like two things. Anyway, you'll get the idea. But when we talk about it, my favorite books, just to throw this out there, was, I can't remember if I mentioned this before, was the, with some of the William Shatner ones, the Odyssey series that he did where, you know, Kirk returned and, anyway, there's several of those. And I started looking at the William Shatner series. There's actually several that I haven't even seen before. So, the first three or four are pretty good.
All right, well, we'll have to open up the book corner and, we've got much to do there. Every single Star Trek book we'll get to eventually. Yeah, sure we will.
And we've got
a
long way to go on this.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
All right, well, it's time to close up our subspace chatter then. I think that's completely closed now. Let me make sure. Yeah, it's closed. All right, good. And head out. Don't know what that. And head out on our main mission.
You locked the tribble in there again.
Good. We won't hear it at all then.
We're going on the main mission?
Yes. So we're going to take a Z-minus 10,000 meter deep dive into one subject and try to stay on course. And this time we're talking about episode 15 of Star Trek Discovery, Will You Take My Hand?, as well as the overall first season impressions that we have. So let's talk about the episode first. We start off with Discovery jumping into the caves of Kronos. Apparently that just happens. And
quite well. Stamets said, am I good?
And we talk no more of that part of it.
I'm surprised. Hey, by the way, I'm surprised he didn't throw out another F expletive.
Yeah. Well,
freaking A, I did it.
Tilly throws out another swear in the episode as well. But, well, that's because she's been drinking Tranya with Baylock.
I want a soundbite of her going, what the heck? What the heck? We need that in this show when things go sideways.
It was a little weird seeing a green Clint Howard.
Yes. Well, he's a little older now. So while Tilly's getting drunk, Giorgio is getting a freak on with stuff. And then we have Burnham and Tyler they're just talking someplace about things. So they're being very
respectful.
We find out that Giorgio is going to detonate a hydro bomb into an active volcano and essentially make Kronos uninhabitable.
Isn't that what they did on the beginning of Star Trek movie with Spock in the volcano? He detonated something to stop the explosion. Well,
he detonated to stop the explosion. This would be to cause...
It was a fusion thing to keep it from exploding.
Right.
So if you know your bombs, you can either stop a volcano or start a volcano.
Exactly. It was a cold fusion bomb. That's what it was.
The trick is to use the right bomb for the right thing.
Red matter? Using
the right bomb, but for the wrong thing, I suppose, is the way you look at this one. And apparently this is a ploy that Starfleet said, thumbs up, let's do this.
because nothing else is working.
Yeah, Burnham goes, what now? Gives a little bit of side eye and she's, okay, what do you want to do instead?
And Saru goes, I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
So we then have a turnabout where we end up with Laurel getting the control to the bomb, handed over to her, and she is now in charge of the fate of Kronos and is able to convince by demand, apparently, for all the ships to be recalled from attacking Earth. And I don't know if we get the end of the war or it goes into a Cold War state. That really, we haven't gotten that far yet to find out what happens there. Tyler goes off with Laurel, and we think just when things are all over and Burnham is reinstated and everybody gets the medals, and as somebody pointed out, Burnham gives her giant speech to the back of the audience. She's facing five people and not facing the 12,000 people the other direction.
Yeah, that's right.
They head out and they're going to pick up their new captain. They're going to Vulcan to pick up the new captain, who we don't know who that is. And all of a sudden, there's a distress call from a ship. And the ship that comes onto the screen is the Enterprise.
Da, 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 da.
And end of season.
Yeah, and end scene. Yeah. Now you want it.
So, what did we think of this episode?
It definitely wasn't the cliffhanger that we had anticipated.
True.
We are Clinton, I don't know about Craig being so vocal about it, but you and I were pretty convinced we were going to end on a cliffhanger.
Well, yeah, I definitely thought we would. I mean, there's so much they had to wrap up.
And I was a little disappointed that we didn't, to be honest.
It was more of a thread than any cliffhanger. Yeah.
It was. Oh, that's good. You know, we're all back. Everybody's happy. Burnham's exonerated. She can have a commission. I didn't really like that. I didn't like the ending. I liked the way that the whole story went up until it had a soft landing.
Well, I was pretty convinced that she was going to somehow become exonerated and reinstated because she's been working her tail off the whole season. I figured somebody's going to recognize that. And apparently, obviously, they did because she took a stand for what was right.
It's not just take a stand for what's right. She saved the Earth.
Well, I'm saying she was standing up for the ideals of what Starfleet's supposed to mean. And what was cool was when she literally took a stand, her ship took a stand with her. She wasn't by herself. She was.
Most of the ship took a stand with her. Most of the ship took a stand with her.
Well, they did. They stood up and they were like, no, we're with her because, you know, standing up against Admiral Cornwell. But what I liked about the whole series is how this season was in itself a mirror, because, you know, you see how things started at the beginning and everything closed looped right at the end, you know, kind of reversed itself, you know,
right.
To a sense. And I think it worked really well.
I think that there were just some elements in this episode that I thought were, you're putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable. And I just felt like they spent a lot of time on the Burnham Tyler relationship that I'm thinking that time would have been better spent with the whole, you know, they're going to blow up Kronos and maybe we need to, you know, figure out a plan for that. And then when you get down to the caves, I would have much liked to have something more than Giorgio just going, yeah, what the heck?
Yeah.
And just like, you know, I was doing it for fun, but
I don't like that loose end either. The fact that they turned Giorgio, Empress of the alternate universe, the mirror universe, sorry, Emperor of the mirror universe. So she's just roaming around our universe. That's not a recipe for disaster. So, you know, future storylines there.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, you can tell that's just a setup for them to encounter her again at some other point.
Yeah, I did believe, I say everything came to a point I liked, but the whole Klingon thing was a little too convenient.
Well, what I would have liked to have get better clarification on, and again, I think we'll get that next season, is because a lot of people said, oh, and like that, the Klingon War is over. I'm going, well, I mean, clearly there's still animosity.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, if you get to that point where in classic Trek, they don't have out and out skirmishes every week, but there's that Cold War, we're going to, you know, develop this planet and we're going to win this planet from you guys. And, you know, lots of stuff. So you're getting to that point, but I think it was left with the impression of that's it. It's just all over. Well, that's
no. In TOS timeline, you've got the Organian Treaty. So really all they can do is give each other harsh looks across the neutral zone.
Right.
Not much left to do, boys. But, you know, in this timeline, you're right. It did sort of fizzle, and maybe we don't know yet. I mean, are all 24 houses going to be united all at once, or are there festering animosities that need to be settled, or rogue elements that we don't know about? That's always likely, because you can't keep the Klingon calm for very long.
Right. So I think that I believe we already know that Laurel will be back. I think we've.
Oh, I hope maybe, so.
And maybe hearing stuff that's just rumor, but I thought that they kind of confirmed that, then possibly seeing Tyler again and so forth. So I think all the characters that we saw this season will be back. Apparently we're still kicking around the whole Culber thing as well.
Tyler is also, I don't mean to be a little negative about the whole show. It definitely wasn't, but the way they tied it up again didn't suit me. Just Tyler is not really human, not really Klingon, so he doesn't belong in either world. When he's in the human world, he's giving away Klingon secrets. So why are we letting him go with the Klingons? He's just going to give away human secrets.
Well, I don't think you can. Well, you could lock him up because of Cobra. I don't know. I think. He kind of said at his point, the reason he was leaving was that, you know, he didn't feel like he would fit in any place. And he's probably right, because he's half, I mean, he's got in his head, he's Klingon / you know, human.
The only thing I can think of is he had feelings for Michael, but she snubbed him. Voke has feelings for Laurel. She didn't. So, you know, there's that whole I'm going with the girlfriend who will accept me thing.
Why don't they just do it?
Because, I mean, he's going to the place where he clearly looks a lot different.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking I'm saying I don't think that the Klingons are going to be like, hey, buddy, how you doing?
Right.
You know,
although he did make friends pretty easily at that gambling game just by speaking their language and,
Palling around with them.
So
it's kind of like, kind of like a parlor trick version of it. It's like, you know, Elephant Man type of situation going there. Oh, isn't that clever? And then I'm not sure how long that's going to last.
Well, right, especially if he has to live in it every day. No Klingon's going to try and stab him in the back. You know, hey, Voke, you're whiter than usual.
Hey, you know, Tyler, Laurel, and Michael could just get together and have some kind of strange polygamy marriage.
I don't know. You need to get Craig, Giorgio to give them some pointers. I don't know.
Craig, is that what you got out of this episode?
I think we learned a valuable life lesson here.
Well, you know, you want to change the way it kind of ended. So maybe they just move to Utah and get married. I don't know if it's legal.
Wow. Listeners, that's craig.step@gmail.com.
I don't know if it's legal there.
I honestly hear fan fiction being written as we speak. So I think he's onto something. Look at that. The tribbles are very cautious suddenly.
I think Craig's a Klingon. Right.
Hey, on a side note about this whole thing, I thought the look of the Enterprise was spot on. I loved it.
Well, now that I think about it, his name does start with a K.
Craig Stepp.
Oh.
Oh, by the power of Kadesh.
I really enjoyed the look of the Enterprise. As a matter of fact, I've got it on my wallpaper.
It was different. Computer. It wasn't the classic TOS, and it wasn't the Altverse.
I see elements from the Enterprise TV show.
It's like the refit, and it's elements of the TV show, and also the kind of pre-refit logical extension back, you know, logical regression from the refit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like what they did with it. I do like that incarnation of the Enterprise.
Yeah, I think it looks like a kind of a mix of Archer's Enterprise with the refit and kind of working, like you said, working backwards from the refit. I think it looks great. I love it.
So the question then becomes, when we get to next season, you've got to do more than the two ships just facing each other. Are we going to go on board the Enterprise? Are we just going to have them on a view screen? Are we going to interact with any characters? What characters are we going to interact with?
If the ship starts phasing, I'm out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you got to ask those kind of questions because you got Michael Burnham and Spock there's obviously some kind of relationship there, whether it's good or bad, who knows? And then, you know, Pike and all that stuff. I think they said if they do show the inside of the Enterprise, they were going to keep it. They were going to make it look similar to the old one, but kind of update it to the aesthetic for the show, which I think that takes, I don't expect it to be the cardboard.
Yeah. You know, right? I mean, we don't want that. Cause that would just be like, whoa, that's all wrong.
Remember when they did that originally when Scotty was sitting on the bridge of the old Enterprise?
Yeah.
It was on the holodeck. It was kind of weird because they're walking around the Enterprise D all of a sudden, and there's the old bridge. Even that, I wouldn't say jarring, but I was like, oh, that was kind of neat. Yeah, but it would be a little jarring to them to be sitting around on a cartoon colored.
Well, they could film that episode in Ticonderoga.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Florida.
But we also have to figure out, like,
or Georgia. Right?
Well, what do the uniforms look like? Are the uniforms going to be TOS uniforms? Are they going to be a variant that kind of straddles that line between Discovery's uniforms and TOS uniforms?
I honestly don't like the uniforms in Discovery as much as I like previous iterations.
I have given up caring about the details of uniforms, the bumps on the foreheads. I think people are making a big to do about nothing. It's like it's about the story.
Oh, absolutely! It's absolutely about the story. But you have to. They themselves, in acknowledging, looking at that Enterprise, it's like, well, the Enterprise is not looking like most of the other ships you've seen in Discovery. It's kind of fits into that universe, but it really has a slightly different aesthetic from these other things. So you have this dichotomy, and I don't think you want to go so far afield with it that it's such a disconnect.
Right.
From the original series to feel like I'm being completely pulled out of that.
But if they're in Starfleet, why would the uniforms be any different?
Well, you could, in theory, have those are either new uniforms that they're
beta testing
to. Yeah. They
haven't received their Amazon shipment yet.
They also could be if the Enterprise is on a 5-year mission as opposed to, you know, just as needed missions, it might be a different uniform for that type of crew. I mean, and again, I don't think we're talking about having it be the standard gold, blue, and red uniforms, but something that hints more closely at that type of look than just solid blue with the piping colors.
Hey, look at the end of Star Trek Continues. You know, they portrayed Kirk as having the newer uniform, and he even mentioned, you'll be getting your son.
Right. And, you know, in classic Trek, we went through
several uniforms.
Right.
It seemed like it was a different uniform every movie.
Right.
Red one.
Right.
And you had Kirk with his wraparound tunic. That's like, why is he the only person wearing one of those? What is that? You know, so you also had dress uniforms that they had. So there's a variety of things that they can be pulling from. I mean, to me, it is more about the story, but I just feel like when I see whatever it is I'm going to see, I don't want it to pull me out of the story.
Okay.
You know,
it's going to blend into some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, by the way, Janice Rand actually sewed that special shirt for Kirk as a thank you. That's why he had his own.
Again, that's Craig Stepp.
Spock, Kirk, and Yeoman Rand moved to Utah.
So overall impressions of the season.
Loved it.
Did you like?
I loved it. It was it was above expectations. Remember, everybody was saying, "Oh, it's first season, got to let it find its legs." No, I think it found its legs like in the first
came out of the gate. Yeah,
yeah, a few episodes. The characters it had all of the hallmarks of a good Trek: good writing, good characters, music, effects, costumes, makeup. It was the whole package. This is probably, depending on how the other seasons go, I mean, if they can keep this pace up, top of my list.
Yeah, well, I definitely feel like it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Right. No, you go, Clint. First.
Yeah, I felt like the season I thought did start off kind of slow, that I had this feeling that the writers and the actors were definitely trying to work out, well, what is a Kelpian, or, you know, how does this ship function?
Taste
lunch.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like it took them a few episodes to get into that, which is natural because you don't know how it all works to start off with. You have to come up with your pacing. I feel like
this podcast.
Yeah. I feel like that one of the things was the overuse of subtitles. And it seems like that really got minimized as you get further into the season, going, you know, either that could be, we've established it, we don't need to go back to it again, or they went, it's a lot, you know, let's try to cut back on that and just use it sparingly from now on. So I think that there were things that they worked out as they went along, and it didn't take forever to get there, but I would say the first 4 or 5 episodes, you're trying to work out everything that's going on here. And they got it fairly quickly. And as far as first seasons of a Star Trek go, I think this was a very successful one. And I think having an overall story arc to go through really helped it. That drove the episodes to keep moving at a certain pace with a certain tone to it. You didn't want to veer very much off of that at any point and just march toward the end.
the whole season was that arc. I mean, every episode was centered around that arc.
Right.
It wasn't, we're going over to this world and we're going to throw in a footnote about this love interest over here. It was the whole season. And I don't think we've seen that before.
Right.
It didn't feel episodic. It felt more like a chapter
Star Trek
in a larger
Enterprise
book.
Kind of did, but you didn't watch that.
We're talking about
Okay. No, the ones that I watched kind of sort of did.
Yeah.
But no one was playing a game of baseball toward the end of the season.
Yeah.
They needed a beagle.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I agree with that. You know, I loved it. I think there was 13 great episodes. The first two, I was like, okay, this is pretty good, but they're kind of, you know, I
think we needed that backstory. I really do. Probably. To tell Michael's, how she ended up as who she ended up and why. It wouldn't have worked if you just jumped in. Oh, here's Michael Burnham, the traitor. No, well, right. How did we get there?
Well, it's the way they designed the story. If they could have used those two episodes for something different, I think. But
I don't think so. I liked it that way. It was like a prologue. Did it need two full episodes? I mean, did we need a 2-hour? You know, maybe not. But it was a big intro. You're starting a war for crying out.
Yeah. What we needed was two episodes, and then oh, by the way, you can watch the first streaming one, number 3, right now.
Yes, I think we all definitely agree with that. The misstep there was only showing the first hour for free.
And then
those episodes need to be together.
Oh yeah, as a two.
It should have been a 2-hour.
It was a two-hour pilot.
Yeah, it should have been a 2-hour premiere, and then the next one streaming is number 3.
Only making half of it for free. I don't think that hooked anybody.
But I loved it. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. I even got pulled into the whole Stamets Culber thing because when Tyler killed Culber.
My son said,
I know I did this. I grabbed my head and jumped up off the couch and said, what? You know, no. And I was pretty invested with those guys. So I don't know. It was great.
Yeah, I think, you get to know the characters, and I think that the characters are evolving and you want to see them evolve. My wife was saying I'd like to see a little bit more of, Groovy Stamets back again, but I don't know if we're going to get him now, type of thing. So you get traits that you like in the characters.
You got to let the mycelial network get into your vertebrae.
That's something that was kind of left as, okay, so the Discovery is no longer going to use the spore drive. That's over.
I think eventually they're going to mothball it. That's why you don't really hear about it or see it
back
anymore.
To shoveling coal.
Yeah.
So the engineers are like, damn it.
So now they have to figure out what else they can do that makes, we've got the ship that the parts rotate. What are we going to do with that now? Because we're not using it for anything. What do we do? Do we?
Pretty.
We'll give it to the Romulans and tell them it's a game.
Giant cut roulette pizza wheel. With it.
Dabo!
Exactly. The world's largest Dabo table.
Got some pizza with it.
I want my Discovery pizza cutter.
It doesn't work if you're cutting and the thing starts rotating on you in the other axis. That's not a pizza cutter. It's like 3D chess pizza cutter.
You can cut two pizzas at once, one at the bottom, one at the top. It's great. All righty. So we overall give a thumbs up to the season. We know that they're going to start filming next season beginning in April.
Yes, that's good news for us.
It is. We don't know. We obviously do not have a premiere date, so we'll assume sometime in the fall.
2025.
Yeah, I was hoping, this is just me hoping, that it would come around September-ish like it did when it premiered.
That's pretty aggressive, Craig.
I know, but they're filming in April. They can get some episodes. I don't know.
A lot of posts going on.
Yeah, the trick for this show is a lot of posts.
That's just me hoping.
Well, we're dashing your hopes, Steph.
I'm still
like
hoping.
We always do.
I know. I'm still hoping that the Mach 5 is going to pull up here and Speed Racer is going to give me the keys. But
maybe we'll get a sneak preview premiere on the cruise. We didn't mention that to our listeners, did we?
Did we? Maybe we did. Maybe we didn't.
I don't think we did. We might have still been on the fence the last time we were on this show.
That's right.
Craig, Clinton, and me.
Chuck. Yes. This guy.
That's the third guy.
You remember your name, right? Okay.
Ensign Tomasi. We are going on Trek Cruise 3 with our spouses.
Yes.
Who are also excited about that. Next January, do you remember the dates?
4th through the 10th.
4th through the 10th. So right after the Christmas holiday, when we're all nice and fattened up, we'll put on our Speedos and go for a cruise.
Not a pretty sight. You don't want to see that.
Lots of celebrities already signed up for that, although that's subject to change depending on production dates and whatnot on their careers.
Well, let's put it this way. I'm hoping to go on the cruise, but Chuck and Clinton are going to shoot me down.
We're dashing all your dreams, Steph.
Craig might have a big production schedule coming up that we still need to talk to his agent.
Yeah.
And yes, I heard CJ is going as well.
Yes.
Oh, she is?
Yes.
Okay.
That'll be fun. So we'll have another Phoenix person go in that direction.
And we'll talk more about that as we get closer to the cruise. And hopefully some of you will be able to join us.
I'm buying the unlimited Tranya package.
All right. Party in Chuck's room, obviously. There we go.
No, I think I ended up with the bigger room. You don't have to come in my room.
Okay.
Get the captain suite.
As long as it has nothing to do with Utah.
I have the one called Lifeboat. I'm not sure what that means. But
Lifeboat number 7 or number 5?
Yeah. Playful name, Clinton. Just go with it.
All right.
It's the one you have to blow up yourself every night.
It seemed cheap. I thought it was good. I don't know. Lots of fresh air.
I did send you guys a text message from a previous cruise we had in 2005 with a sign that says 10 forward. And I said, that's my first stop.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wonder where that was.
That was on the Carnival Destiny, I want to say, on deck 10. there was a sign that said 10 forward. And then there's 10 midship and 10 aft. Which staircase you're on, because there's staircases.
You know that's going to happen again. You know that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I expect a bar to be there.
Well, yeah. We'll belly up to Quark's and get ourselves a warp core breach.
And a bartender wearing a funny hat.
Yes.
That's really mysteriously old. Anyway, where are we going next?
So, next, we're going to go to our warp speed roundtable. So this is the game we're going to call Who Do You Trust?
Nobody.
You're going to go through an escape room challenge. You know about escape rooms? You go in there and there's all these different puzzles and you have to solve the puzzles to make it out of the room. It's essentially beating the clock to win the game.
Yep.
You're going to go through an escape room challenge. Who would you rather have on your team and why? So you get to pick one of these characters to be on your team. Garak, Captain Lorca, and we're talking about Mirror Universe Lorca.
I was going to say, which one?
Yes. Okay. Empress Sato or Lore?
I don't trust those Mirror Universe people. I never did. They killed my son.
So, okay. We will start with Chuck then.
I'm going with Garak.
And why?
Because Lore has no respect of life. He's just not a good...
Unless you're a fellow Android.
Nothing against all my Android friends. I I have an Android phone. Just saying. There's no discrimination going on here. I just don't like him and his motivations, shall we say. Empress Sato and Captain Lorca, again, not going with the Mirror Universe people. Just not happening. Which leaves Garak. Can always have a nice cup of Rectigino with Garak.
Rectigino. Well, I'm also going to go with Garrick because I figure that if you end up not being able to escape the room, at least he can tell you some interesting stories.
You might be bored silly.
Right. Yeah, the other people, they're just angry people. They've got, they got nothing.
Dr. Bashir, let me tell you about when I was 12.
Just a simple tailor. You know, also, he has skills. He has all these different skills. So to me, he probably has the best chance of getting out of the room because he knows a little bit about a lot of things. Whereas most of these other people, they're hell-bent on one thing only, and they're not interested in the subtleties of observation. They just are in it for the, you know, the big win, and they don't deal with the nitty-gritty stuff. No.
Garrick would also have
some, that type of stuff.
Yeah, Garrick would also have some contacts in the Obsidian Order. He could probably
some contacts on the outside to get you out. Yeah.
Gentlemen, we don't need to solve any of these problems. Just knock on this door three times, you know?
Second chap.
So, Craig, how about you?
Okay, I'm going to go with Lorca.
Ooh.
And the reason is, I figured if he can plan his way to get back to the mirror universe and get to where he was at, he can certainly get me out of an escape room.
Even if he only lasts an hour there, he's good.
I was going to say, keep in mind he died.
Yeah, but that was a lot of planning to become captain in another universe of another ship that, you know, that didn't blow up and work his way out, bring everybody that he worked a bit, pretty big puzzle to get back to the mirror universe. So I think he can pull it.
Fair enough.
And he's got fortune cookies.
He does. So you get something to eat. You get snacks.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So you have, maybe you have Garrick and Lorca. So you've got some Rectigino and some fortune cookies.
Yeah, there's no way I could pick Lore.
I mean, I didn't pick Lore, but the advantage Lore would have is if he couldn't get out of the room, he would just like bust through the wall. Okay, enough of this and just like smash it to pieces, you know?
Welcome, brother.
All right. So our winner, if we have one in a game such as this, is Garrick. Coming in second. And Miss Congeniality is Captain Lorca. I don't know how that works.
Hey, we didn't end up with a no-way tie.
That's right. All right. So now we're about to boldly go that away because it's the end of the show. But before we do, I want to find out, where can people find you besides being on the Trek cruise next January?
Chuck? Oddly enough, you already know the future?
Oddly enough, we're taking another cruise about a month later.
Oh my.
From Miami to Tampa to Panama. Panama Canal. That'll be fun. So two cruises in 2 months. They can find me online at chucktomasi.com. which also has links to our various podcasts, both podcastingfordummies.com. A little slow on my own bell here. And Technorama, which you can find at chuckchat.com.
Very good. Mr. Step, before we crush all your dreams, where can people find you?
You can find me at my personal website, spyndle.com, spindle.com. And just like Chuck, you can find me over at chuckchat.com/technorama, where we do the Technorama podcast and stuff.
What did you say on your other video? Because there's enough shenanigans to go around.
Yeah.
That might be our new tagline.
Yeah, I have to go back and listen. I can't remember what I said.
Yeah, sometimes that happens with everything I record. I never remember.
Yeah, hey, good thing I recorded it because I don't remember it.
I just got to listen to it.
And hey, by the way, I just did a video and Chuck did as well. For Carl Pauline, he does productivity YouTube videos, and we both did videos on there. So go look up Carl, and you can find him. Find us on there.
Can you put that in the show notes?
Yes. Yeah, I'll do that.
Excellent, excellent. And remember, you can always get the show notes over at thetopicistrek.com, and this will be for episode number 15. And you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4. Excuse me. You can find me at my Facebook, with Comedy Forecast. You can find me on Twitter, Comedy Forecast, on Instagram, Comedy Forecast, pretty much any place is Comedy Forecast, maybe even MySpace. I don't know, but no one's going to go there tonight, so don't worry about it. So it's time to disengage impulse engines and engage the spore drive. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Yes, you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
Don't put on a red shirt. Put on a blue one.
Call the Orions. We can't salvage this show.
My shirt's plaid.